This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
You're listening to Property Matters here on MPR. I'm Greg Watson. Lovely to have your company today. This is a show where we talk all things property, and this week we've got a real mixed bag, as we sometimes do, of what's been happening in the news and otherwise, what's happening in the market locally. We've got a few scary stories relating to tenants and landlords, which is sometimes fun, sometimes a word of warning. We'll just see where we go with those ones. The first article, though, I'd like to open with just a little bit about what's happening in the market. And this article by Esther Taunton on stuff.co.nz says, "Buyers spoiled for choice in spring property market," CoreLogic says. "The spring has sprung and property sales are picking up, but buyers are still in the power seat," new CoreLogic data shows. Sales volumes rose 1.6% in August compared to the same month last year, the 15th rise since April of 2023. However, those volumes were still below normal levels, with the latest monthly total of 6,320 properties about 15% below the 10-year average for August. Core Property Chief Property Economist Kelvin Davidson said the subdued sales levels, combined with the steady flow of fresh listings each week, has contributed to a rise in the number of properties on the market. Now, we normally see this in springtime, as more properties tend to be looking a bit nicer and people tend to get them on the market. He does say that buyers will be spoiled for choice, for example, in Wellington, Bay of Plenty, Auckland and Otago, as total stock in each of those regions has risen by 20 to 25%. Total listings are up 13% from a year ago to the highest September level for at least 6 years, and the relatively low levels of sales were more about buyer caution, he says. Clearly, lower mortgage rates will be boosting sentiment, but a reduction in job security will be pushing the other way in terms of buyers' confidence. Of course, in this environment of low turnover, we're also seeing property values drop, and that will tend to benefit some groups over others. But people who were still confident about their jobs and could get finance were in a position to take their time and secure a deal in their favour, Davidson said. That includes first home buyers, although mortgage investors would still be a little more circumspect. As mortgage rates drop, the pool of willing and able buyers will start to grow again and slowly erode that high level of listings, resulting in more competition and some upwards price pressure. In other words, in my view, you'd summarise that just simply by saying it's a good time to buy at the moment. He says the rise might not happen overnight. However, given that interest rates are still relatively high and existing mortgage borrowers on pre-agreed fixed rates won't see the benefits of any cut straight away either. Davidson said another cut to the official cash rate in October seemed all but certain and would help bring mortgage rates down further. But although property values may not fall much further, a fresh boom seems unlikely when affordability remains stretched, listings abundant, and the labour market weakening. So what we'll tend to find there is there will be a slow and gradual increase, in my opinion, on the house prices. So you can take your time a bit and try and find a good deal. Speaking of good deals, this article, I sometimes go a little bit international, but this article here is from Brianna McElraith on Stuff. She goes, "How Kiwi house prices compare to five other companies." So interest rates are coming down in New Zealand and slowly the average house prices too. She talks about some of the figures that have just come out. But the average house price here in New Zealand, just around $905,000, or seven times the average household income. So in Australia, the average house price is, in New Zealand dollars, just over $1 million. So a little bit cheaper to buy here in New Zealand by about 10%. And then goes through several examples. In the United States, the average house price is $671,000 New Zealand. So that's, of course, huge, huge country. So it really does depend on where you are, but that's interesting. Cheaper to buy a home in the United States. And even though, like I say, some variation in Hawaii, your average purchase price is $1.6 million. In West Virginia, the average house price, $273,000, so quite a difference. House prices in Canada, I'm heading to Canada next week for a bit of a holiday. Over there, $801,000, so that's less than the $900,000 here in New Zealand. So, and then UK, the average house price is $612,000. So we are cheaper than a number of those companies. The average house price in Japan, $406,000. So that's just something that we're just throwing out there. Not many places at all where it's more expensive, just Australia. People hopping over the ditch to go and work, etc. The house price is a bit dearer over that way, just using medians, which is a bit of a weird article, that, I guess, in that it's just so generalised. But so let's look at this article instead, if that's got you feeling a little bit disheartened or downhearted. Here's an article that was on Stuff in mid-September. It says, homes you can buy for less than $100,000. Yes, you heard that right. And the article says, when $500,000 is considered a cheap home in New Zealand, looking for something less than $100,000 might seem impossible, but they do exist. So loving a good bargain hunt, Stuff combed through current sales listings. They excluded relocatables, as that price listed is for the house and not the land. They also excluded the glut of apartments in Auckland for under $100,000, as they're all leasehold. So the selection they found is quite eclectic, and that's why I'll bring it to you. It's quite fun. It needs a bit of thinking outside the square, getting outside your comfort zone, and while one doesn't have a bathroom, it will require a potential owner to go get outside a bit more. So let's have a look here. So some of these houses, it does say, just before we get into it, they might be small, but they are in sought-after locations near beaches, rivers and mountains. And what is small by New Zealand standards is normal overseas. Parisians and Londoners live on average in 46 square metres. I remember once living in Sweden, I lived in 30 square metres. It was plenty. You wouldn't want to have a family in there, but, you know, it worked for me. So here we go, Kapiti Coast, just down the road from where I'm recording. $45,000 for a Kapiti Coast bolt hole. The Kapiti Coast is a little bit bougie, the Riviera of Wellington, the article says, it's why they like it. Frequented by wealthy retirees and holiday homes, as well as families of lawyers and government types who commute into the capital, and you could join them. Just $45,000 gets you a 6.2-metre-long Ace Supreme English caravan with its own patio and garden area. An extra 16 square metre annex extended on the side acts as a lounge and dining space. The caravan has its own water supply, both hot and cold, as well as electricity. It is situated in a 5-star holiday park in Paraparumu. For a small weekly fee for the campsite, you can use its facilities, including its recreation room, kitchen, rubbish disposal, bathrooms and toilets. It's got pictures here of that, and it's absolutely fine. It's not a funny old caravan or anything like that, and it's on the Kapiti Coast, so there we go. Here's another one. Oh, they do say that there is a little bit of a downside, because you may need to pay, you know, for power, for living at the camp. It can be quite small and claustrophobic, but again, they say it's a lovely area. The next one is a Scandinavian log cabin in Rotorua for $49,000. Why they like it? Well, it's cozy and romantic in the land of smouldering hot pools and magnificent forests. Your very own log cabin in the woods. It's even double glazed with European joinery to keep you warm. What more could you want? Well, a toilet maybe, as it doesn't come with a bathroom. The downside, you'd need to live near bathroom facilities or add it to the house, which would be an extra cost. Here's one, and these sort of ones have always had an appeal for me. This is $50,000 for a historic church at Otautau in Southland. I pronounced that wrong. There we go. Why we like it, St. Joseph's Parish Church, and it's got photos, could be the answer to all your prayers for a cheap home. With stunning architectural ceilings and a bit of design and renovation flair, you could transform it into a funky New York loft-style home with very blessed vibes. The downside is needing a budget for renovation work required. But man, it looks cool. Lovely old church. $69,500 for a unit in Kawerau. So why they like this one? It's perfect for downsizing retirees who want to be near neighbours without the restrictions of a retirement village. It's one of three for sale, newly refurbished with lounge, bedroom and separate bathroom and toilet. All you have to do is move in. It's a short walk to town. It's a spacious lawn out the front, and it's surrounded by bush and trees. The downside is that there is body corp fees for what it covers, and but it is a freehold property. Finally, this one I'm not so sure about, $60k for a wooden cabin, a seaside cabin in Herbertville, Tararua. And why they liked it? Well, living in a campsite has add-on bonuses. This 24-square-metre cabin is situated in Herbertville campground site in Tararua. A 24-square-metre cabin has a bedroom, living area and kitchenette and sink, but no toilet. There is a space next to the cabin for a family-sized tent or caravan for extra living space. Toilet and showers available to use in the campground at 50 cents per shower. The cabin owner can also use a shared laundry and freezer. And it's got a few things included, but downside, no toilet, but you can use a campsite one, and one less thing for you to clean. Now this one here is interesting. They're finally an $80,000 for a one-bedroom home on 40 acres of land and 5 minutes to Orewa. This is set on a private bush block with native bird life and views all the way to the Waitakere's. It's private and hard to believe that you're so close to the hustle of Auckland. The house is 9.5 metres by 5.5 metres, leisure-built, transportable one-bedroom home. Good-sized kitchen, gas hob, plenty of cupboard space, and it's well-insulated. So there we go. But what's the downside? You're only paying for the house itself and must pay a monthly fee to the trustees, which the current owner told staff was $200 a month, which they said they found manageable as pensioners. So again, wow, there is some ways, if you think outside the square, that you could get into a cheap home. So if the 900,000 median sounds a bit steep to you, then those are some extra options for you. Just going back to those criteria, in case you wanted to do this yourself, they used search criteria of non-relocatable homes, in other words, the homes that are just being sold without land, and under $100,000. So good luck with that. If you're feeling adventurous, then there we go. We're just going to move along now just to look at some other matters with regards to property. There was an article here I was going to read out, but I've sort of done a bit of a spoiler on that one. It was an article by Brianna McIlrath talking about the average asking price for properties in Auckland dropping below $1 million. Remember the national average I talked about with relation to the previous article was about $900,000. In Auckland, it's now down to $986,750. So there we go. And the article talks about how a number of prices have come down, but it is very Auckland specific. Again, I'll just go back to what I mentioned earlier, which is that it's a good time to buy. We're going to just go to an article now about mortgage rates, just for a few moments. It's called Battle of the Banks, Kiwi Bank Lowers Mortgage Rates. And this is from September the 17th. It says, the battle for lowest mortgage rates continues as another bank makes a cut. Kiwi Bank has lowered its one-year fixed rate to 6.29% per annum with a minimum 20% equity, which is now the leading market rate. Shorter-term rates were currently most popular amongst those refixing following the OCR drop in August and the potential for further interest rate falls if it lowers again in October. So good to see. This is just one in many articles. It's on an ongoing basis of mortgage rates coming down. If you're coming off a fixed term and looking to fix again, think carefully for how long you might do that, because it's quite possible that you might not want to fix for too long if those rates are still looking like coming down. We're now going to go to some tenant-related stories. This article from Susan Edmonds of Radio New Zealand from September the 18th says it's scary out there. Tenants say times are tough, even if rent growth is slowing. Christchurch woman Tara has seen a rent increase from $480 a week to $580 a week in the past 2 years, and she's now living in a smaller house. She had to move because the owners wanted to move back in. It took 4 months to find something affordable that was dry and near my son's kindy. She said she was starting to feel real pressure. Her sole parent support is $618 a week, and she also receives working for families and child support. She says without those, she would be in real trouble. She has not accessed any additional support. I often find the applying for assistance more stressful than helpful, and I've been doing small amounts of contract work, which makes it practically impossible to get government assistance because they need proof of projected earnings, which I don't have. Tara said she felt there needed to be rent controls to stop rents increasing so fast, but data shows there may be some good news for tenants like her. In August, Rents increased 0.3% month on month by the stock measure, which includes all tenancies. On the flow measure, which is new tenancies, they fell 0.1%. So pretty static there, the rents at the moment. On an annual basis, the rents are up 4.3% and 1.4% by flow. But at the end of last year, rents were increasing at the rate of more than 7%, and that's nationally, but it does depend a little on where you live as to variations. BNZ chief economist Mike Jones said a slowdown on rent rises was what had been expected. He said rents were likely to flatten and could fall a bit. CoreLogic chief property economist Kelvin Davidson said monthly movements in data could be affected by seasonal factors. Year on year, Auckland rents were down slightly and Wellington was up, he said, but overall the rental market has slowed quite dramatically. The heat has definitely come out. There's a switch from a landlord's market in 2023 to a tenant's market in 2024. He pointed to surveys showing it was harder for investors to find good tenants. Rents are very high in relation to incomes. That would be a natural restraint on growth anyway. You've got more listings coming onto the markets. That's more choice for tenants. Demand isn't necessarily falling, but it's not rising as much as it was because migration has slowed down. He said first home buyers were still moving into owning homes and freeing up rental properties, and people were leaving the country, which also meant houses come available. The fact that a lot of departures at the moment are New Zealand citizens, they're probably young and living one or two per house, so they're probably freeing up more houses than the typical renting family. While some people might also be choosing to rent their homes rather than sell them while the housing market was soft, he said. But there are also new builds coming onto the market being bought by investors to be rented out. So these factors are all part of the reason why listings have gone up at the same time that demand isn't as strong. You don't tend to see rents fall to any great degree, so it's probably a story of them flattening out for a while. Davidson said people on a long-term leases tended to not see rents increase as fast as the wider market. People who could continue with an existing lease might not see much rent increase at all for the time being, he said, because those factors aren't going to change overnight. Incomes were a driver of rent and unlikely to lift sharply in the next few years, he says. Property investor Steve Goody says there seemed to be an oversupply of homes in some places, and that was driven by fiscal policy, tax breaks, and cheap money to build them, he said. Now money is expensive, rents are easing, and nobody wants to buy them, so the developers are not building more, but the damage is done. Another tenant, Kathy, said she felt tenants were vulnerable even if things were improving. She said she moved 20 minutes out of Whanganui to a property that was about $200 a week less in rent than in the town centre. The rentals we looked at in February 2022 that were the same size as our one were damp, no section, no animals allowed. I'm lucky to own a hybrid vehicle as I work in town, the kids go to school there. If not, petrol would put us in a similar position. Even though rent might not be getting a bit better, I still look frequently and the prices seem to be in the $500 to $650 per week range for a three-bedroom home with a section. As a single mum and with main custody and chronic health issues, it's really scary out there. I feel very lucky with our position. We can cover the basics and we have a warm, dry home. So, yes, it shows a bit of the difficulties that people can have. And we're now going to look at a number of bad tenant, bad landlord stories. We'll just try and bring you those. We'll bring you two or three, depending on how the recording time goes. This one by Amy Rideout on September 17th on stuff.co.nz says, "Screaming profanities, antisocial tenant evicted." A tenant who intimidated her neighbours with antisocial behaviour, including shouting and screaming profanities, has been evicted after her landlord turned to tenancy tribunal. According to adjudicator Michelle Pollock's ruling, Tony Ganley's behaviour included shouting and screaming profanities, domestic disputes, blocking the driveway, having guests who frighten the neighbours, and playing loud music late at night. Ganley's tenancy on Nelson's Tasman Street was managed by Summit Property Management for owner Sally Dawson. The evidence given by both parties shows that this antisocial behaviour has most often happened late at night and in the early hours of the morning, Pollock said. Following complaints from neighbours, Summit gave Ganley several informal warnings. When these didn't work, Summit issued three 14-day notices for antisocial behaviour over a three-month period. First was in May after an incident where Ganley and her former partner had an argument culminating in swearing, yelling, screaming and slamming of doors at 11 p.m. The second was a month later after an incident involving yelling, swearing and disorderly behaviours and a blocked driveway. and the third was issued in June when 8 police cars attended the property after an incident involving yelling, screaming profanities and intimidation, Pollock said. The adjudicator noted that Gandy was trying to turn her life around. However, she determined that the antisocial behaviour had occurred and the landlord had followed due diligence in serving notices. The owner of the property is concerned that neighbours are living in fear, having the quiet enjoyment of their properties breached, and are subject to nuisance such as not being able to access the driveway and being intimidated when they make requests for the vehicle to be moved. I consider it would not be unfair to terminate the tenancy considering the circumstances in which the behaviour arose and the notices that were given. I cannot see that the landlord has acted in any retaliatory way in bringing this application. So Pollock evicted Ganley, giving her 9 days to move out and ordering her to pay Summit Property Management $27, the cost of the filing fee. So it is very hard to move people on. However, if you get all your cross the T's and dot the I's, then there is still that possibility. So here's another article here from Marty Sharp on Stuff. Landlord can't remove tenant despite being inundated with aggressive emails. A landlord who has been inundated with aggressive emails from the tenant of their Hamilton property has been told they cannot terminate the rental agreement. Both the landlord, who is represented by Harcourt's Hamilton Rentals, and the tenants, Damon Mather and Danielle Werner, were unhappy with the way things had been going at the property in Hamilton. Mather and Werner had been in the house since 2018. It's a brick three-bedroom home with one bathroom and a garage. Various grievances were heard by the Tenancy Tribunal last month. The landlords told the tribunal that Mather and Werner had breached their obligations by inundating them with emails of an aggressive nature, challenging contractors attending the property, leaving an aggressive phone message, and being destructive and disruptive by constantly disputing any work carried out on the premises. The tribunal noted there had been a clear history of Mather being difficult and sending many emails about issues that concerned him. It said the landlord had become so overwhelmed by the number of emails that he informed the tenant that unless there was a specific request for maintenance, these emails would be ignored. It said the harassment of the landlord had been a deliberate act, and there is evidence that the landlord has communicated regularly up to a point with the tenant and attempted to attend all the tenant's concerns. Mather said he looks into anyone who attends his house and questions them while they're there, and that his aim was to have a healthy home for his family and to save the landlord money by looking after the premises, making it better and making sure the maintenance is done correctly. The tribunal said termination of the tenancy was a serious action and would not only affect the tenant but his family, and in this circumstance it would not be a proportionate response to the tenant's behaviour. However, this does not prevent the landlord from issuing notices to the tenant if the behaviour continues or reapplying to the Tenancy Tribunal in future if the behaviour escalates, it said. The application for termination was dismissed, but Mather and Werner were told they must allow access to landlord and their contractors without harassment and they must restrict email correspondence to requests for maintenance only. Mather and Werner wanted the landlord to fix various things at the property, including a leaking roof and gutters that overflowed when it rained and mould found in a wardrobe. They also claimed there had been breaches of healthy home standards and that there had been a breach of the landlord's responsibilities. On top of that, they disputed the validity of a rent increase. At the hearing, it was established that the repairs had been undertaken, but they were not to the tenant's satisfaction. Mather said he wanted the roof properly investigated and repaired and felt that his claims about ongoing concerns were not being believed by the property manager. The tribunal ordered that the landlord organise for the roof to be reassessed and any leaks attended to. It also ordered that the guttering be reassessed and fixed if required. If the landlord failed to comply with these orders, the tenants could undertake the work and charge the landlord the costs of the work up to $1,500. And it goes on. So it can be tricky. Termination these days is taken very seriously as to it's really hard to move tenants on, quite simply. This article, finally, by Tracy Neal from New Zealand Herald, probably takes a cake. It says, war between landlord and tenant over sign-on fence escalates to power and water being cut. What began as a minor dispute between a landlord and his tenant escalated into an all-out tit-for-tat war. It ended with the tenant having to buy water and a power generator after landlord cut essential services to the home. The landlord, who has left $1,750 out of pocket in rent, has now been ordered to pay $1,574 to the tenant who has name suppression and left the property last month after a squaring up of who owed whom. The tenant had moved into a standalone home behind another on a shared driveway in October 2021. The landlord held the power and water accounts and invoiced tenants based on their usage, a recent Tenancy Tribunal decision detailed. Problems began when the tenant placed a business sign on the fence at the front of the property. Landlord said he was driving past the property and saw the sign outside and was upset as the tenant had done alterations in the past and had a caravan in the driveway. He sent her a message and an argument started. Rather than remove the sign, the tenant said she would move out and take the lounge carpet she'd replaced herself after the original was damaged in the Auckland floods of January 2023. The landlord said if the tenant left with the carpet, he would deduct the sum of a replacement carpet from the tenant's bond. But as he had not lodged the bond with the bond centre as required, the tenant stopped paying the rent. He told the tribunal he'd pulled up the carpet to dry, but there was never any conversation about the tenant replacing the carpet. After the tenant stopped paying the rent, the landlord warned her he would cut off the power and water. She went shopping, and when she returned, he had done so. Unsurprisingly, the tenant and her family found life without power and water very difficult, the tribunal adjudicator Melissa Allen said. The tenant pleaded with the landlord to turn it back on, but was told he wouldn't until she paid 3 weeks of rent owed. The tenant replied that the bond would cover the rent. She then had to buy water for drinking, cooking, and to flush the toilet. She also had to pay to use shower facilities at a local community pool, describing it as a difficult few days without electricity for cooking and charging phones. Then she bought a power generator to use for electricity. The tribunal noted that the tenant reconnected the water after 2 days, and the landlord put the power back on after 4 days. Here's the important part. Interfering with the supply of power and water, except where necessary, is a serious matter, Allen said. The tenant was left in very difficult circumstances, even if only for a matter of days. There are serious potential health consequences when power and water are disconnected, as the tenant was unable to cook, wash, and flush the toilet. The tenant filed a claim in May this year, alleging a breach of healthy home standards. The landlord responded with a claim seeking orders of termination of a tenancy, rent arrears of $1,750, $444 for power and water owed, $4,000 to replace the carpet, and $1,000 to damage to an outside wall. Allen was satisfied that the power and water records were accurate. There was agreement over the amount of unpaid rent, but the tribunal did not consider the landlord was entitled to any compensation for the carpet. He said there's clearly been a breakdown in communication. The old carpet has been thrown away. There was no evidence provided to back claims the landlord about damage that had occurred during the tenancy. Allen found the tenant was entitled to compensation for lack of amenities, as the home should have met the standards within 90 days of a tenancy starting, but did not. The landlord also accepted that he should not have disconnected the tenant's power and water and said it was clear at the hearing he regretted doing so, Allen said. Under the circumstances, he had acted unlawfully and therefore damages were warranted. A total award of $2,194 to the landlord in rent owed, plus $444 for power and water, was offset by just over $2,000 owed to the tenant in compensation and damages, plus the bond of $1,400 and a small net award to arrive at the final figure of $1,574 owed to the tenant. Allen said that while each party had been successful to a degree, she considered the tenant to be a substantially successful party. So, boy, what a mess. There's so much advice I could give around what happened there, what went wrong and what didn't. We might have to cover that on a future episode of Property Matters, as that's all we've got time for this week. Thank you to the team here at Manawatū People's Radio. You can find these shows on mpr.nz. Alternatively, if you prefer to have it on the go, listen to a podcast, you just search on Google Greg Watson Property Matters and you'll find your way to the podcast, or you can search it within the podcast app that you use. Thanks again to NPR. Have a great week, and we'll catch up with you again soon.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.